should we have more civility or less? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Hi, Barry. It's great to be back with you. For those of folks who have been paying attention, did we run a rerun last week? This is a show for July the 14th. 2018. Did we run a rerun last week? Yes, we did. And the reason was we recorded one and there was a major technical glitch and I couldn't get it fixed by the submission deadline. So there is one in the can, and what we're going to do about it is put it up online. So if you want to listen to last week's show never aired on WLRY, you can look at it. Looking at it won't do you much good. You can listen to it.
I don't think we did a. I don't think we did a vlog.
No, we didn't do a video. We could do that. The problem is we already chew up enough bandwidth with just doing an audio by Skype. Doing a video by Skype would leave us with nothing. But in any case, it will be at www.principledpolicy.com. And it does precede this program because this is kind of a continuation of it. So if you hear this one,
I was just about to say, yeah, we are starting a series this month on the issue of civility. And well, we were going to start last week, but again, with the technical glitches, it's now a free download from our podcast center. And you can go pick that up and listen to it. And we're going to continue some themes from it today because, well, Chuck, there are a lot of things that are happening around us, in the international scene, nationally, here in Ohio, and close to home, where the issue of are we still a civil society in the highest, most honored sense of the term civil anymore, or are we not? And I think that you and I are finding an awful lot of examples out there as we do our research that might suggest that where society is less and less civil, and that is a great sort of concern and sadness. But I think that it's based on something even deeper that I think most people just don't recognize. And of course, that's what we're going to try to unpack as we go is to recognize what the deeper issues are with this and work around them. Now, to start with, we referenced a couple of articles last week, but there was one we didn't get to, and I'm glad that, now we're starting this week with this whole idea of the civility debate, because there was an article, and we will put these links up on the principledpolicy.com website. And this was from our folks over at CNN, and it was from their politics page. The header called "The Point," which is Chris Salesa's column, but this was a guest columnist writing in that spot for him by the name of Gregory Krieg, and this was posted last week, Chuck. This last Friday on the 6th, and the head of the article is entitled they put it in a quote, "The civility debate," unquote, "isn't about manners. It's an old school power play." And you and I read through this and we talked about it a little bit off air. And, we both looked at this as, I think that's a swing and a miss by CNN, probably once again, on this whole issue. Because as we've talked about, there are attacks on folks, you see it coming up almost every day in the news. We talked about on the program last week about the Sarah Huckabee Sanders situation with the Red Hen restaurant there in suburban Virginia. Being basically you put a reservation at this restaurant for you and a party of seven others. You go, you meet the reservation time, you get there, you get seated. The waiter comes out to start bringing you drinks, and the next thing you know, the owner's walking out saying, "We're not going to serve you. You need to leave."
Well, it goes beyond that. Let's reiterate, if you've been living in a cave, not only did the owner come out and throw you out, and by the way, this was a democratic decision. The servers decided, voted amongst themselves whether they would serve Sanders or not. Talking about a terrible way to run a business. I can tell you this. There are people, I'm in a business. I'm in the dietary supplement business. And honestly, I deal with a lot of people whose my politics and their politics, my philosophy and their philosophy don't mix. There are a number of things. They believe in very strange occultic things. Now, do I not deal with them because they believe in these odd things that are antithetical to my belief system? The answer is no. I continue to do business with them. I'll listen to them. I will occasionally engage in discussion on these issues if someone is open-minded. But I am a Christian. I believe that there are spiritual forces out there, but I don't believe that they can overcome the power of Jesus Christ. And therefore, when somebody comes into me, and I am a lover of perusing things that I think are flatly absurd. For instance, if someone would look at my YouTube record, what they'd find me is looking at a lot of stuff on the flat Earth. Why? Because the arguments are so patently absurd, and I am a student of logical fallacy, and the videos on YouTube on the flat Earth and on other things are absolutely rife with these bad arguments. So, that being said, the bad arguments involving the whole thing with Sarah Sanders and you know, dealing with people that you don't necessarily agree with. As far as I'm concerned, their money is green. I will deal with them all day long. As long as they don't come to me and say, you have to believe this or I will no longer do business with you, which is exactly what has happened in places like the Red Hen restaurant in Lexington, Virginia. They have basically said, Starbucks has said the same thing. They basically don't want your money if you're conservative. There are places.
Well, you know what? Good for them because they're not getting my money.
Well, I was going to say.
I call them star yucks.
The only time I
really just balanced it.
When I lived in Westerville, I would go in there occasionally and get a chai tea latte. Even though, I'll be quite honest, the only reason I'd go over there was because right next door was a Panera and theirs was much better. But they'd be out of the mix. So I'd go over to Starbucks once in a blue moon and get one. I won't go into a Starbucks now. Besides that, I'm not a coffee connoisseur, obviously. And $8 cup of coffee just strikes me as a dumb idea.
It is actually a dumb idea.
Yeah. But,
and frankly, you know, the way I look at it, it's basically overblown, usually burnt, inundated with sugar syrup. No thanks.
Well, let's go back to this thing. And, you know, the Red Hen is a franchise. And to show you that this is not necessarily a one-sided thing. The Red Hen is a franchise, and the one in Lexington, Virginia, of course, had a dip in their Yelp ratings. If you don't know what Yelp is, it's an online rating service. And honestly, with today's crowd, Yelp, if you have a bad Yelp rating, it can cost you big business. So, you know, they have essentially chosen to mark themselves as a place where you really, if you're conservative, you don't want to do business there. Now, how did how did the other side overreact? Well, they decided to have protests outside. They had one clown who showed up and threw chicken feces at the building and got himself arrested. That's the kind of dumb stuff you don't need to do. And there's also the dummies who went around to other Red Hen restaurants and gave them bad ratings.
And you know my theory on that. We've talked about that as far as these protesters go. You honestly do not see people of the conservative persuasion going out and doing those kind of, shall we say, in-your-face protests. I mean, the biggest protests that I've probably seen conservatives do are we all gather in front of the Supreme Court steps and hold a press conference, or
you know, we go stand silently in front of an abortion clinic or go and pray with, you know, the women trying to go in there to get an abortion. That's the kind of protests that most people conservative persuasion, and I won't say everybody, because some people are a little unhinged even on the, you know, the conservative end of the ledger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, my theory is that the vast majority of the folks that are probably out there doing these stupid things like the, you know, flinging the chicken poop at the restaurant are probably from the left, and they're doing it to try to smear the right and to and I think my thesis may be upheld by the fact that if this had been somebody who was conservative, the media would have been micro-examining the individual.
Oh, yeah, we'd have known what he had for breakfast.
What has happened now is, after the first report of the arrest, radio silence. Nothing.
Yeah, absolutely nothing. No, and don't kid yourself, that's right out of Saul Alinsky's playbook.
Absolutely.
Pose as a member.
Doing the counter thing.
Yeah, pose as a member of the opposition and do something really stupid so you can gin it up for publicity.
You and I were involved with an organization that was self-identifying itself at one time with, shall we say, headgear. And I remember you and I both were, you know, during these meetings saying, listen, you don't want to just put that out there for everybody, you know, because you're going to get someone who's going to get one of those hats and they're going to go out and they're going to do something extremely stupid or dangerous or criminal. And then it's going to be because you have no institutional control over, you know, who is getting these things.
Right.
Your organization's going to take a hit.
Well, and the thing was so simple that it could have been counterfeited in a heartbeat. That's the dumb part. But they were selling them online as a fundraiser, and I'm like, yeah, what you're doing is you're selling your uniform to everybody on the planet who might. And when you said headgear, it was hats and anybody could go out and get one of those hats. And for after a while, it got to be t-shirts. And I think some people had jackets made and all this stuff, which, you know, I'm not one of those kind of guys that has to, you know, I'm not a fraternity joiner and feel good because we've all got the same uniform on, that kind of thing. We warned people. It's like, look, you're inviting people to put your uniform on and then go out and do something stupid. And then say, look, he's one of them. He's one of them. I mean, look, it never fails. If you form a group that has popularity, has a kind of a populist bent to it, and you are a conservative, you have infiltrators. You have leftists who will come to your meeting. And they'll listen to what you're saying, and they'll even get up and make speeches and make all the right noises, and then go out and do something that will and work their way into leadership in many cases, and then come out and say something really racist or really and you come to find out that they're an infiltrator. It happens all the time, and it's part of the Alinsky playbook. You work your way into a group. You get friendly with the group, and then you come out and destroy them from within. It happens all the time. This is the way that liberalism has destroyed parts of the Christian church, especially the mainline denominations. People would come in who were not Trinitarians, were not Orthodox Christians, and would go to seminaries and get degrees, get PhDs and that kind of thing, and then go back to the seminary and teach false doctrine and false things about Christ, and then it would have the imprimatur of scholarship. This is how you destroy something from within. You work your way into the into leadership, and then you make sure that nobody who was conservative, who is conservative, can get back in. In other words, it's very difficult in a lot of seminaries these days to hold the view that of six-day creation, of Christ being the deity, the second member of the Trinity, and a member of the Godhead, instead of just a great teacher who came to lead the way for us. That's kind of verboten, and that the Bible was actually written by the people it was purported to have been written by, you know, were assigned to them, the authorages, since time immemorial, since the beginning of the church. We can't believe that now. You know, there were four authors to the Pentateuch, JDEP, that theory, the Graf-Wellhausen theory. All those things are a part of academia now, and if you do not believe them, you cannot be a member of the fraternity of academia. This is the kind of incivility we're talking about. You basically weasel your way in by purporting yourself to be one thing, and you suddenly turn out to be another thing, and then you get in control, and you don't let the other guys back in, because you know what that means. That means you're broomed out. That's what goes on in these things. And I'm not necessarily making that statement about exactly what happened with these Red Hen protests. You know what the best protest you could do with a group like the Red Hen, Barry? You and I have done it many, many times. Don't go there.
Yeah, I was going to say, just basically say, no, I'm not going to frequent that restaurant anymore. And honestly, you know, that's the best boycotting actually does work.
Yeah.
I've been involved in a number of boycott circumstances that when the company starts really feeling the pain, they start making the change.
Well, I can tell you, I have noticed a bunch of conservative talk show hosts saying openly, no, boycotts don't work. Don't do boycotts. And you know what? The first thing I said in my head was, uh-huh. You're trying to avoid a boycott because don't kid yourself. Those conservative radio show hosts, and so do the liberals, know that boycotts work.
Yes, they do.
Because all you got to do is
now the problem with liberals is when they actually try to do a boycott, they show just how few liberals actually are paying any attention. I mean, if you remember, liberals tried to boycott Chick-fil-A. What happened?
Oh, the place. You couldn't get near the place because I tried to go on that day. Yeah.
It wasn't because of protesters. It was because of supporters who basically said, nope, if you are going to try to hurt their business, we're going to help their business. And I remember Chick-fil-A reporting they had some of the biggest sales they'd ever had during those days
exactly.
And weeks.
I remember when it was they did the thing. And then the other side tried to do a quote-unquote kiss-in. Where they all
yes.
went and were stood out at Chick-fil-A and were engaging in homosexual osculation, that kind of thing. And the answer is nobody cared. That fizzled badly
out because they were like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to do that, fine. People did keep their kids away from it. Yeah. Just so they didn't have to explain it.
That kind of shows that whole civility issue.
Exactly.
That usually civility and civil society means that we all try to quietly and peaceably live our own lives, and if we have to intersect with someone else, there are, shall we say, certain, and I'm not sure if they're even rules of procedure or just traditions of procedure that we tend to follow, okay? Now, some people in the heat of the moment and emotionalism kind of sometimes tend to forget those rules of engagement, I guess is the best way to put it. And then they do silly things. But usually what happens is when that happens, law enforcement gets involved and somebody, you know, ends up with some charges of some sort against them because of their lack of following those maybe unwritten rules of civility. Now, there's some written rules of civility, and they're called assault charges. So you got to be careful on those. But, Chuck, usually if you have disagreements with somebody, personally, politically, whatever it might be, you know, there are ways of going about, you know, dealing with that. One is to analyze what they're saying and respond, you know, with some detailed responses, and oftentimes we've seen that, you know, as somebody puts up an article or something online you disagree with, and you can come back and, you know, write a counter article, and we see that. There's, you know, letters to the editors or guest columns in newspapers oftentimes. That's a kind of a civil way of doing it, you know? Okay, I totally disagree with your thesis, and here's where I believe that your thesis fails, XYZ, this is where I believe my thesis is stronger, you know, ABC.
and we engage that way. You know, there's formal debate, you know. I've been in some of those. As a matter of fact, you've watched me in one of those.
I chronicled one of them many years ago, and to be quite honest, when you got into the real back and forth. Now, this wasn't even really a structured debate, the one you were in.
No, not
A real structured debate has a moderator, and the moderator essentially watches each side's time, and there is a structure and function to it. You were in what I would call a political forum where the issues got back and forth pretty both sides sort of wrung all their points out of the arguments. And I'll be quite honest, I'm prejudiced, but you did prevail. And I could see the audience, that was a college audience, turning your way. More than once, I saw it at Ohio State University, and I saw it at Bowling Green.
I forgot about the Bowling Green.
The Bowling Green one. And in both cases, I watched the audience go from hostile to at least neutral.
Which I always considered a win.
It's a win.
You know,
it
you're
is
going
a win
in with someone who's completely dead set against you, and you can kind of get them to go, oh, okay, maybe I hadn't thought about that way.
Now.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're exposing the flaw and the weakness in my support in my team's arguments.
yeah.
I love those. I really love them.
But, and what didn't
you know,
happen?
The point is that even in that kind of an environment, there are still rules of civility that are followed.
Exactly. And that's part of my point being that there was no name calling. There was I'm sure there were some logical fallacies thrown in here and there. And in fact, I'm sure you, as I recall, you called a couple of them out, but you did it in a civil fashion. It's like, well, it wasn't a name calling nastiness. Nobody was ready to go out in the parking lot and torch cars and slit tires and do dumb stuff. Everybody
a couple of them, especially the panelists on the other side, may have wanted to turn the effigy.
They didn't make it. Hey, here's the deal: they didn't make it clear that that's what they were going to do. That they wanted to do. People walk out and they grumble, but they have to admit that you made some very good points, and that's the whole point, ladies and gentlemen. We have lost the ability. One of the things that is lost. When we lose the ability to think critically, then we lose the ability to think critically civilly. And it becomes a matter of people suddenly calling. I was telling Barry this. I have been on websites, and since my view is more Christian than conservative by far, and more Christian constitutionalist than conservative, I have been called a liberal online by suggesting that something different than the tone of the particular website. And somebody would come out and say, well, you're just a leftist, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, you don't know what you're talking about, because I have been a constitutionalist and a conservative since I've had political sensibilities. And that was when I was about the age of 10 or 11. I was brought up in that kind of household, and I had those sensibilities, and believe me, I've never slipped over to the liberal side. There are times when I look at a liberal argument and I'm like, you know, you're right on this, and the conservatives are wrong. And when you get right down to it, it's an issue of where is truth? And you have to admit, occasionally, they hit the truth button on the head when we're missing it. It's not very often.
Yep.
It's not very often.
But yes.
But it happens. Yeah, it happens. And you have to keep your mind open to that, and you have to think critically. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know how to think critically, I would suggest that you contact Barry and I, and we'll come in and teach class on the Constitution for you. And in some of that, we do some talking about how to think critically about that kind of stuff. And believe me, it's a hard thing to do when you get past a certain age to learn how to think critically. If you're a homeschooler, you should be teaching your kids fallacy detection. There are materials out there. Doug Wilson's got some stuff out there. No matter what you think about Doug Wilson, he's very good at that kind of thing. He's got a, there's an intermediate logic course, a beginner's and intermediate logic course that he teaches that, that goes along that line. But you should learn to think critically. And when you think critically, sometimes you find yourself questioning your own position, because if you don't, then you're not being honest. Now, what do I do about being called names? I usually laugh it off and just say, look, enough of the straw men and the red herrings and the name calling. Let's get down to the core of your argument. Here's where you're wrong. And you point out the places where the argument is incorrect. And you point out the reasons it's incorrect. What does this lend itself to? Barry, you kind of brought this point up before. It's done in article form. It can't be done in 144 or 288 characters on Twitter.
Oh, sure.
It can be done on
Facebook, but it's rarely.
What do you get when you do that on Facebook? You get TLDR. Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with that means, it means too long, didn't read.
Yep.
Now, what you usually get is somebody who makes another comment, says TLDR, here's what I think. And it's in some kind of, you know, condensed format. And I'm like, well, if you didn't really read my argument, then you don't, it's clear from your comment, you didn't really understand what I said. Because you already admitted you didn't read my article. You really can't do it on a comment section. Although you can get things in a comment section where you question the basic presuppositions of the commenter. I've done that many, many, many times. And people will come back and say, where'd you learn how to do that? And I go, all I did was question what he said. And I asked a rational question. That's the only thing I did. I asked a rational question that he couldn't answer. You know, it's not that hard to find where the weak part spots. And the other way to do it is to come out and say, well, you're just nothing but a liberal, you know, a wild-eyed liberal, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't work. It doesn't convince anybody. The whole point behind an argument is to convince not necessarily the person on the other side of the argument, but to convince those who are watching and listening. And I can remember being chastised for debating in written form with people, and they said, why do you do that? And I said, because the argument, you're never going to convince the other person. I go, my point is not to convince the other person. I'd love to do that, and that's part of what my argument's supposed to do, but it's to convince the other people who are monitoring what I'm saying and don't necessarily have a dog in the hunt. They don't know which way to go. I'm giving them reasons to come over to my side. That's why I do it. And that's why I do it.
That's why I do it in as civil a manner as possible.
And
if they choose not to do that, then that's fine. You've made an effort and you move on. But that's not what we have in today's society. We have an uncivil society. We have the idea that your ideas are evil. Your ideas hurt people. Your ideas aren't worth giving airtime to, and your ideas should get you not just disdain, but oftentimes you should be physically attacked for your ideas. That's the kind of bubbling up we're getting in this culture. Now, we see it. I mean, you see that, you know, you and I look at Breitbart. They're doing this thing now where they're basically doing a regularly updated count of how many sources of violent attacks against people because of whether or not, you know, it's, and we talked about this on the program that people can get on our website, about the young person getting their Make America Great hat again ripped off their head and a drink thrown in their face by some random passerby who just, you know, who has a different political view, but doesn't have the sense enough to know how to express it civilly, you know, attacks. I think one of the counties in Nebraska, the GOP headquarters was attacked and vandalized because they were Republican. You have others who are, they're right now, they call it their rap sheet. It's now up to 351 acts
acts of media-approved violence. And what they mean by media-approved is the media reports on it but never condemns anybody for being violent.
Well, actually, you're reading
against Trump supporters.
You're reading it as of my screen at the moment. It's 352.
Okay, so they've added another one. So, again, they're clicking. It probably depends on when we clicked.
Yes.
But you know, and they're going down. And again, this is one of these things where anybody—they're asking anybody out there that if you know of one of these things that have happened, boom, you know, send them an email, and they'll establish it and check it to make sure that it's comprehensive, that the list is comprehensive, and that it's factual. And so they've got another of these things, you know, like a Fox News reporter during the announcement on Monday for Brett Kavanaugh's, and we're going to get into that in a minute, Brett Kavanaugh's nomination by Trump to fill the Anthony Kennedy Supreme Court seat, a Fox News contributor had to leave where they were positioned at the Supreme Court because of fear of being injured by a mob of screaming liberals who were incensed that Trump even got to pick a nominee, much less who it was. They frankly didn't care who the name was. They were already lined up, and it didn't matter. It was the fact that Donald Trump is possibly going to put somebody on the Supreme Court.
I did see a headline on a conservative site that said, essentially the headline, the email would read, call senator and oppose blank because really bad things, in parentheses.
Exactly.
And blanks to be filled in later.
But I mean, if you go down this thing, I mean, again, they have, and I give Breitbart credit. They actually do check their sources. It's been very, very rare that they've had to print any kind of retractions on anything they've put out there. But you go down this list, you know, senior aide to the president harassed on the street by an angry bartender. Motorists screamed curse words at Sean Spicer, who was the Trump administration's former original press secretary. He no longer works there. But this just happened back 2 days ago. Screaming curses at him. Trump senior aide Kellyanne Conway harassed in a grocery store. Anti-Trump activists vandalized New York Department of Human Services office. Idaho GOP representative receives threatening voicemails and emails because of a Facebook post. Hillary Clinton aide publishes contact information of bookstore owner who stopped the harassment of Steve Bannon. And basically, the goal is for people to harass the bookstore owner for actually defending against an individual who's shopping in their store from being accosted and harassed.
Okay, let's go back I'm going to bring something up that's going to infuriate the left. What does this look like? Now, this is not necessarily an apples and apples comparison, so I'm going to couch it in those terms. This is Jim Crow.
Absolutely.
You're selling to a black man. You're selling to a free black man. You can't do that. If you do that, we're going to do things to your customers, and we're going to burn your store down. This is exactly Jim Crow, except it's not based on skin color. It's based on political ideology.
Oh, absolutely.
This is Klan tactics against Catholics and Jews and Slavs and other immigrants. That's exactly they are basically taking a page out of the Ku Klux Klan's playbook on this.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And Chuck, it even gets to the point where, you know, okay, in a civil society, if I have a beef with you, okay, let's say hypothetically, you do or say something that I take personal offense to. Okay. What's my proper response to that? Well, as a Christian, it's to forgive. I get that.
Right.
But let's say just in general, in a civil society, what's my proper response to that? I should seek you out and let you know that I felt that you were in error in what you said or did and how it impacted me and see if we can resolve, right?
Exactly.
That's not what's happening here. People are upset about politics or about an individual's actions or lack of action, and they're attacking third parties. And I'll give you one that I think is probably the most egregious one I've seen in a long time. Okay? You have a woman whose child had juvenile cancer. Okay? The child was at such physical distress that it required St. Jude's Children's Hospital came in and basically have saved this child. Okay? Great story.
Yeah, beautiful.
Well, the mother of the child sent a tweet out thanking a donor to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital for their support. I mean, and the support isn't minor. This individual has pumped $16 million to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in the last 10 years. $16 million, Chuck. That's not a small feat.
No.
And this woman understood that that's kind of support helped the hospital to be able and equipped to save her child. She tweeted out a thank you. And she was almost immediately bombarded with harassing, threatening, and violent email responses from people she didn't even know, because the person she thanked for their donation was Eric Trump, the son of Donald Trump. And these, shall we say, unhinged human beings decided that she had no right to make him seem human and be nice to him, and they were going to teach her a lesson.
Well, that's not the only place where you're seeing this. Think about when this whole gin up of children being held in cages and that kind of thing, which is still out there, even though it's become clear that children aren't being held in cages. Children are in foster care of people who have come here illegally and are under arrest and about to be tried for the purpose of deportation. But nonetheless, we had a number of celebrities, male and female, who came out and said things about kidnapping Donald Trump's granddaughter and locking her in a cage with pedophiles so she could be raped.
Oh, it wasn't his granddaughter. Well, I think it was his son.
Well, guess what? It was Barron. It was his granddaughter as well.
Oh my goodness.
Chloe. Okay. Little Chloe. Ivanka's daughter. This guy, and what was done about it? Well, the people kind of got a little backlash, but gosh, it doesn't seem to have hurt them any. That's part of this list that Breitbart has listed. It was both Barron and Chloe, and mm-hmm. and some of the things that have been said about Melania and what should happen to them. And I mean, these people haven't stopped. This is the kind of incivility that we're seeing, and honestly, Barry, it surpasses. If you are a student of history and you know anything about the newspaper wars before the Civil War, the incivility between the two sides was simply at beyond the boiling point. And it spilled over eventually, obviously, into a war in which somewhere between 600 and 900,000 people were killed. The majority of them in the South, where the population wasn't anywhere near as high as the North. Nonetheless, we're seeing things being said that far exceed what was said during that time period.
Well, and let me just, I want to add a little vignette here, Chuck, because this is another one. Again, I have some real issues with all this that's going on. Obviously, we know a lot of this stuff with people being accosted at restaurants and on the street that we're starting to see of Trump officials things is being driven by because Congresswoman Maxine Waters basically went out publicly here about a week or two ago and basically said that's what people should do, that they should harass them and never leave them alone, and to and do it in public spaces. And you saw was it Kirstjen Nielsen, who's the secretary of DHS secretary, she and her husband or boyfriend, I think it was her husband, went to go see the Mr. Rogers movie and had a group of men basically screaming in her face and threatening to physically attack her.
You're actually mixing up two things. That's the Florida Attorney General who's.
You're right. That's the Florida Attorney General. We talked about that.
Her boyfriend. Yeah.
Back that up.
Kristen Nielsen was harassed.
It's hard to keep them all straight. I apologize.
Kristen Nielsen was harassed in a Mexican restaurant.
In a Mexican restaurant. Yeah, that's right. She was in the Mexican restaurant, and the Florida Attorney General was at the Mr. Rogers movie. That's right. Still, same thing. This is all being generated, and some of it was happening beforehand, but Maxine Waters, who's a liberal Democrat from California, who's been in Congress for 28 years, maybe?
Since 1789, I think.
Okay, yeah, so a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
Who's basically, she's become unhinged herself, and she believes that it's perfectly legitimate and it's a free zone for people to accost and possibly physically harm anybody who supports Donald Trump. And people are doing this, and they're going out on this, and it's just becoming absolutely crazy out there. Now, frankly, you and I have talked about this before, and I will say for myself, I was not a Trump supporter. He was not my pick for the nominee for president. Neither was John Kasich, but that's beside the point. And when he became the nominee, I really wasn't all that satisfied with him. And frankly, I was part of the group. I was part of a thought process that said, I'm a Christian. I hold to the Bible. I have a biblical worldview. I can't, share my reputation, i.e. through my vote, with evil, which I believe that there was evil in the man. I believe there was a lot of evil in Hillary Clinton, too, but I didn't say that one evil, discounted the other evil, and so therefore it was okay. So, no, I did not vote for Donald Trump. But we get hate mail on that, that's okay.
Yeah, that's good. That's fine.
But over the last, 500-plus days that he has been in office as President of the United States, I have grown to respect his acumen and his sense and his ability to get the job done. And the fact that he has, at least at this in this juncture, shown that he has at least some passing affinity for or warm feelings toward traditional values, i.e. standing up for life. Standing up for the sanctity of human life and basically doing some things from his office of president to strengthen the life movement, i.e., reissuing the Mexico City policy and pushing for Planned Parenthood money to be set aside for a while at the very least, and doing some other things, signing legislation that is pro-life. This is something we never saw out of the previous administrations. Yes, I'm saying multiples because you didn't see this out of Bush either. Yeah, the Mexico City policy was a Reagan era that was ended by Bill Clinton and wasn't brought back in by George Bush. So, I'm saying I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that I appreciate what he's doing now. But at the time, looking at his track record, his history, and not knowing, what his actual service might look like, I wasn't a big fan. But I am certainly not a big fan of the, and again, 351, 52, 50, however many it's becoming. And these, and Chuck, they're going back. I mean, they're looking all the way back at the beginning of the administration. Actually, they're going back to 2016 to the elections.
Yeah.
I take that back. I scrolled all the way to the bottom.
2015.
They're going all the way back to September of 2015. So in the last 3 years, over 350 acts of aggression and violence or verbal assault, etc., because of a person's support, involvement, engagement with, association with, or otherwise tangential relationship to President Trump. And then before that, nominee Trump.
Before that candidate, Trump. Yeah,
has become so unhinged that we now have what's called the walk away movement. And I think that's a very interesting thing because these are self-described, self-proclaimed liberal Democrat voters who are now coming out, and I forget who it was who started this this movement. It just started here not too long ago, and I think that it was because the individual who started it was basically, I guess the gentleman's name was Brandon Straka, who is openly homosexual, from what I gathered.
Yes.
But he founded this campaign called Walk. It's like hashtag Walk Away. And he basically said, I can't do this anymore. I can't engage in this uncivil, you know, political mess that we're, that people from my side of the political spectrum are doing. And I'm done. I'm walking away from it. I am not, and that means, it doesn't mean he's not going to be a liberal. He's just not going to vote Democrat anymore. Well, he just had something that happened to him over the weekend. He walked into a camera store to buy, you know, some equipment, and basically they said, you can't have, we won't sell to you because you're going to be using it for, quote, alt-right purposes. So in other words, he's basically said, I've been blacklisted. It's the Jim Crow stuff. Yes, and I think it's legitimate to say it because it's true. But there's been more and more. If you go to YouTube, and maybe we can put some of the you know more less offensive ones up. there are a number of these, and it's growing of people. And that again, guess what? I think it's the sister of the woman whose child was served by St. Jude, who thanked Eric Trump and then got blasted for it. She's a liberal. She loved it. She's now put up a walkaway video. She's like, that's it. I'm done. Chuck, I think this is sort of like the social and intellectual thought equivalent of a boycott. It's time that people who still want to cling to a civil society realize that there comes a point in time when the people that you're associating with have gone so far off the rail that you must cut ties with them in order to preserve a civil society. Now, had something somewhat similar happen, Chuck, you know about it. It was over a piece of policy, a long-time piece of policy that many people think is a good idea, but some people basically got very, 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 very attached to and engaged in some of the same tactics that this Breitbart list is making up about Trump supporters. It was over a piece of policy, and you had some of the supporters of wanting to see this policy get done take it upon themselves, as far as I can tell, maybe egged on by someone who was in some role of influence in relation to this policy. And I'm not going to name any names. Was it me? Okay, I'll just say that. I was involved in the policy, but I wasn't involved in any of this. Who basically, some of these supporters went to a noted political leader's hometown and picketed in front of their house. And on one report, which I've since found to be accurate, accosted the individual's wife in the grocery store and made some very, shall we say, wildly specious claims about her husband and his leadership and, you know, basically pulled the same type of uncivil discourse that we rightly condemn folks on the left.
Exactly.
Like I said, the vast majority of people don't do it that way, but there are some people who, because they just, they don't have balance in their lives. They don't understand that God is really in control of all this, not you. You know, that God is sovereign over all these things and that all things work together for good. Romans 8:20 says, all things work together for the good to those who love God and who are called according to his purposes. And for us to arrogate to ourselves that we can pick up, get in somebody's face, and we're the quote-unquote change agent of making them do what we want them to do. And you notice God's not in that thought equation. You know, we make them do what we want them to do, or we will punish them. Well, that's taking the role of judge, jury, and executioner,
yeah.
Which God is the just judge. God is the determiner, and he weighs you in the balance, and God determines your fate. You know, God determines, you know, your salvation or your condemnation. It's not up to us. And for us, that's the underlying idea behind all of civil society, Chuck, is that we're not God.
And that's the bottom line.
We are not the sovereign. We are not the final arbiter. We are not the judge. We are not the jury, and we are certainly not, except in very limited circumstances, under law, the executioner. Now, I don't argue that the death. I don't argue against the death penalty as a topic. I argue against the unjust application of law that creates situations where people who are put to death who shouldn't be, and those who the law would clearly state are worthy of that punishment are let off.
Walk free. Yeah.
Right, which means that justice is imbalanced, but that's because man has kicked God out of the equation and is trying to do it himself.
Yeah, that is the bottom. That's where the loss
of
civility.
That's the bottom line. That's the reason why it doesn't work.
That's where the loss of civility comes in, too. You know, the Christian idea is that if you have a disagreement with a brother, you discuss it with that brother or sister. And, you know, there are larger doctrinal issues but you do those in debate. In a structured debate, you know, I was just watching. I had to run the evening service here the last couple of weeks while our pastor was on vacation at church, and we were looking at a video, a series by R.C. Sproul on the Reformation and especially Martin Luther, and. One of the most important things that you can get out of that is Luther did not want to start a different church. He wanted to have a debate to straighten out the issues of what he saw as corruption that had crept into the church during the Middle Ages, between about the year about 400 or so up to his point, about 1100 years. He wanted to debate those issues and get them straightened out in the church. Is that what happened? No. What happened? It became very uncivil. And in his older years, Martin Luther himself became uncivil. And the reason he became uncivil was because he was tired of being constantly under a threat of death.
It can make you grouchy.
But at the beginning, he literally wanted to go in, and he thought he was going to get a fair hearing and get to debate the issues with some of the policymakers in the Vatican. And in fact, he got called in, and when he thought he was going to get a debate, what he got was, "You must recant now or else. We're going to not only excommunicate you, but we're going to try you as a heretic and do what we did with your predecessor, John Huss." And if you know anything about Christian history, John Huss had a number of the same ideas as Luther about a little over 100 years before, and was burned at the stake using the same tactics. Called him in for a conference, gave him safe passage, and then when he got there, denied him the safe passage and burned him at the stake. So this is not something new, but it's not the way things are supposed to be done in the Christian church. You know, Paul, read the book of Galatians. What was Paul doing? Paul was basically going back because there were a group of, called the Judaizers who were following him around as he created these churches, and following him around and saying, well, to become a real Christian, you have to become a Jew and follow the Jewish laws, dietaries, and have circumcision and all these other rituals. And Paul had to go back through on his second missionary journey, and with his letter, which the letter to the Galatians comes after the end of the first missionary journey and before the second, and say, look, did I not make it clear that the law is passed away for the purposes of salvation, not necessarily for the purposes of sanctification? This is the whole point. That was not a fair debate. So he had to go back and do the debate piecemeal. You couldn't get a one-on-one discussion, and when they did at the Council of Jerusalem, the Judaizers lost. Those who were requiring the following of the ceremonial and dietary and ceremonial laws, they lost in the debate, and yet, did they stop? No, they didn't stop. Why? Because, honestly, they were under the control of Satan, who basically wanted to destroy the church from within. That's the bottom line. And the fact is that both sides, in many ways, I see a lot of people talking about conservatism, and they'll come out and tell you right up front they're an atheist. Well, guess what? You can't make any of this work, really, without God. You can't. You can try to run
it.
You can try to make it run under your own authority, but the bottom line is, once you abandon God as the source of law, you abandon law. Because then it becomes a hodgepodge of what people are thinking at the time. This is why we have an over dependence upon quote unquote philosophers. Now, philosophers were great when they were under the tutelage of Jesus Christ. When they started to abandon him under guys like Hegel and some of them before, even Kierkegaard, who basically twisted Christianity into a shape that it didn't belong in, you begin to see the people, part of Darwin was really a philosopher. He really wasn't much of a scientist because his ideas have been debunked, although evolution lives. But he was more of a philosopher, and one of the things he wanted to do was basically make it possible to be a fulfilled atheist, intellectually fulfilled atheist. And in many ways, he succeeded in that. We have people that will defend Darwin to this day, despite the fact that most of Darwin's theory has been debunked. Although they have to go back to it for a number of reasons, which we can't go into because we're getting short on time. But you cannot abandon God and have things work well. And we can see that in the French Revolution. That's the difference between the American and the French Revolution. The American Revolution really wasn't a revolution at all. We just basically said the king no longer is acting like a king and he's done. In the French Revolution, they chopped their king's head off. And the first thing they did was eliminated the church. And attempted to recreate the world in their own image. Tried to go to a 10-day week.
And yes, it was a 10-day week.
That was the French Revolution.
Yeah, the whole mess crashed and burned. Why? Because God created us in a certain way. He created us on a 7-day cycle. And that's why we should pay reverence to the Sabbath and not do commerce and that kind of thing on the Sabbath day, if you can avoid it. But also, Jesus came and said, in the case that you had to do something on the Sabbath day, like during harvest period, sometimes you can't take a day off because the bad weather's coming and you got to get it in, which means you got to work on. Jesus pardoned that. He said, "I'm the Lord of the Sabbath." And sometimes you got to take your ox out of the ditch. There's a legalistic way of looking at the Sabbath and there's not. Well, there's a legalistic way of looking at everything and there's not. And right now, how do we make a law? By philosophical and judicial consensus. What do you get when you do that? You get Roe v. Wade. You get Obergefell. You get all the laws that written not by a legislative body, which is what the Constitution requires, but written by a judicial body, which is forbidden in the Constitution, and yet we have it, and it's called settled law, which is what we're going to be. You're going to hear a lot about that in the next coming few months as Kavanaugh goes through his confirmation hearings, but. You cannot disconnect from God and you get a hodgepodge of laws that begin to one set of rights is more important than the other set of rights. God views everyone's rights equally and everyone has the same set of rights. Well, Barry, that being said, we're out of time.
I was going to say, I think we're probably pretty close to the end. So we're in order to be civil and not hold our folks too long, I think we should probably close up now.
We do. We need to close up. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. If you want to hear the unaired program, go to that website, www.principledpolicy.com, and join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.